Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Today we fire up the Open House time machine and hit reverse back to 1988, the Seoul Olympic Games. Duncan Armstrong is the upstart Aussie rank outsider in the men's 200 metres freestyle final. What none of us knew that day was that Duncan and his coach, Laurie Lawrence, had hatched a cunning plan to win gold that day. Duncan Armstrong went on to great success both in and outside of the pool, but it wasn't always so. He also faced abject failure. As a National Day of Thanksgiving ambassador, Duncan says he has a great deal to be thankful for. Duncan, we're thankful you've joined us on Open House this week, in a year where the Commonwealth athletes of today are heading back to Scotland, the very country where you donned your green and gold for the first time.
Yeah, that's right. It was my first international team, actually, Dwayne. So a 45-man and woman intrepid young swim team went off to Scotland to take on the best in the Commonwealth in 1986, and I was part of that team. So I was very, very fortunate to be in such a large team for my first team, and I had a brilliant coach in Laurie Lawrence, and he really guided me through, and we were able to win two gold medals there.
What was there in your experience that first time round that you weren't prepared for?
Oh, probably all of it, Dwayne, to tell you the truth. You can read your magazines and listen to the older swimmers and listen to your coaches and the experienced group that you might be travelling with. But until you get there and see the size of the crowd and the excitement in the town, and Glasgow will really turn it on for sure. And to be standing there poolside and to be able to smell the competition liniment, everyone's got the rub-down oil on, and it's got a unique smell with the chlorine, and just the crowd being excited, and then the pickup of the event and the tension, and there's no way to prepare for it. You can only get through it. So the first timers who are going over to Glasgow will be in just for the ride of their life. You know, they'll come away with so much wisdom and so much understanding for their next big international meet. But there's nothing to prepare you for your first one. And the Commonwealth Games is beautiful like that. Like, a lot of people sort of say, you know, the Commonwealth Games isn't the quality meet that it used to be and all that kind of thing. But there's nothing takes away from a big games atmosphere. And if you're lucky to be a rookie on the team or a first timer in any of the sports up there in Glasgow, you know, you really got lucky, because it's not the World Championships, it's not the Olympics, it's the Commonwealth Games, but it still has that wonderful atmosphere that gets you ready for those other two big meets, hopefully in your future.
They were fabulous days, and yet they were marked still with disappointment. There were some strange decisions made by the selection in the teams that you were in. You didn't swim in some events that I'm sure you and Laurie Lawrence were anticipating you swimming in.
Yeah.
How did you deal with that disappointment, given that you've trained, you've spent 365/6 days a year getting up at stupid o'clock and getting wet in the freezing cold and giving it everything that you've got? Emotionally, you're living on the ragged edge. How did you deal with it then versus how do you deal with it now?
Oh, I dealt with it very poorly. As an 18-year-old, basically, I stood up in team meetings and screamed at the selectors and used profanities and marched on out. So in the moment, it was just too much for me, because it is a pretty good description that you gave, Dwayne, in terms of the commitment you put in there. You put in, you know, all those things that you said, you know, very early mornings, 6 days a week, and swimming isn't a sport that is easy, it stings. So I felt that I'd done enough to get enough work, but the selectors had their own criteria going on, and they wanted to give other swimmers a bit of a chance, and, you know, you can understand that a small bit. But in the moment, I handled it very, very poorly, and basically set about doing the races that I was allowed to do and to stick it right up their nose. So anger fueled my swimming a great deal, and fury and jealousy and all those sort of things to people that I felt that disrespected me in those moments. And it was a tremendous fuel at the time, but I found it really lacking in real life once I'd retired from swimming, so I had to find a better way, and that was through Jesus.
When did you find your faith, and how did that happen?
I found my faith around about 11 years ago this year. And it happened because I'd basically run out of steam being pathetic the way I was going. I was almost on my third round of everything. I'd had a failed marriage, and I wasn't tremendously close to my two sons, no matter how hard I tried. You know, I'd basically gone from job to job and just manipulated my way through without really caring for anybody else. I'd basically develop mates and move them behind me as soon as I was in front of them. So there was a list of human debris behind me that I'd basically used and stepped on and moved to what I thought was my next level. And and I was just about to start that whole cycle yet again. And I met a really strong bloke who took me along to church one day, and my partner, who's now my wife, Rebecca, at that stage got a well before me because she's a lot smarter than me. And I got taken to church by my girlfriend and one of my best mates at that stage. And about the third visit in, Jesus was waiting for me, and he crash-tackled me, and we started our relationship from that point of view on, and it's just been the defining moment in my life.
Why did you say yes that first time?
Oh, there was a lot that I liked about Ian, my mate, and Ian Finlay, and he had this really quiet strength about him, and he had all the things that really powered me up. He had jet skis and great and beautiful cars, and he and his wife had a great relationship, and he had expensive apartments, and he was a great builder, and he just ticked all my boxes, and yet he had this very, very quiet understanding and strength and a little bit of grace for everybody, and which I didn't understand. And after trying to get in front of him for about 6 to 8 months, I sort of looked at him. I said, "What is it about you?" And he goes, "Oh," he just laughed. And he said, "I go to church," and, that made me laugh tremendously. And I just laughed, and he said, "You should try it." And about 6 weeks later, I was sort of thinking about it. We had a go, and I walked in there with all the shields up and the armor on, and just laughed at people basically, because I went to an AOG Happy Clapper Church with a band and a karaoke board, and which I still go to today. Yeah. I should say. But I went in where the welcome was just fantastic, and yet I didn't feel any of it, of course. But I went to my area over to the hidden in the side, right hand side, in the pews one day, and this presence of God fell on my shoulders and felt like I was having an asthma attack. I've never had an asthma attack, but that's what it felt like. And I touched on this unbelievably brutal love that I'd never felt before, and I didn't know how to handle it, because as a swimmer and as an athlete, you're a control freak, and that's how I ran my life. I tried to control every single thing in my life, and so I just became a menace to myself and everybody around me in that area. So when I touched on Jesus' love that day, I just was overwhelmed, completely overwhelmed in the moment, and just started crying. And my girlfriend, we'd been going out 7 or 8 years, and we were never getting married. I was too clever for that, and she'd never seen me cry. So here I am, because I'm a blubberer, not a weeper. So there's knots and tears and mucus, and oh gosh, it's awful. And so I was sobbing. And Becky was just looking at me going, "What is going on with you?" And I'm looking at her going, "I have no idea." Mm-hmm. And then I became a limp noodle. I didn't know who I was or how I was and stuff like that. So it was just an absolute nightmare of a year for the personality that I'd built. But it was a shedding, I think. It was a shedding of all the falseness and the craziness and the stuff that I thought was real and had to be done every day and things like that. So, he's been peeling me. It's like the good old layers of the onion analogy. He's been peeling me ever since, and the peeling continues, 11 years later as I try to get deeper and deeper with him. But it was a real shedding of really unworthy behavior, thoughts, judgments, and that kind of thing, which I still struggle with today, but I can feel it coming. I can feel myself heading into self-reliance and stuff like that. So, I quickly switch into trying to tap in more to his word, get my book out, get the Bible out and dive into it and talk to other Christian blokes and try to get away from my self-reliance mechanisms that served me so well, that I thought served me so well for 35 years.
Duncan, I sense you must have a really heavy heart for fellow elite athletes of your generation who have come out of that time of representing Australia broken men.
Yeah. Yes, I do. I think we've seen it in the media lately too, that some of our highest and most prolific winners, gold medal winners and everything like that, are still struggling with the everyday. The rise of social media, I don't think, has helped our competitive spirit. I think the rise of social drugs and recreational drugs, I don't think, helps our competitive spirit. We are born with a competitive spirit, and lucky enough we find a sport that we can actually really fulfill our destiny physically. And there's wonderful platforms to do that with the National Swimming Championships and the Commonwealth Games and the World Championships and the ultimate, the Olympics. To be able to go to the Olympic Games is such a privilege. But you need a certain strength and a certain, ability, a God-given ability to understand that arena, to get in and be successful. And sometimes when you leave that arena and you take that strength, there are some really, really dark ways that things can exploit that. And And yeah, I do have a heavy heart. I have no judgment whatsoever for the boys and the ladies going through it at all. And I find it really difficult to have a public persona where people just want to talk about it in a negative way.
Yeah.
So I always try to make sure that I'm trying to say something positive about them, because there's a lot of positive in that. Like, these are great people, and they're fallen on hard times, and unfortunately with the rise of social media, they have to do it through the public eye. Whereas I had a, you know, just like them, I headed off to a private hospital for 3 weeks just to get over myself at times, because I was having, you know, a mental breakdown or a physical breakdown, because I wasn't able to integrate as quickly as I thought I should. So there was stress with that, and, you know, but because there was no Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, you know, I was allowed to do that and do it well and come out of it the other side quickly. Whereas when I see the guys in the public eye now, you know, it's very, very difficult what they're going through to get any sort of privacy, and I think that adds to the angst.
Duncan, let's turn now to your role as ambassador for National Thanksgiving Day coming up on the weekend.
Yeah, I think this is a fantastic concept. It's been going since about 2004, and it's been really gaining momentum, so receiving support from the Prime Minister and the Governor-General each year, over 1,600 communities last year, and about 250,000 people actually participated in the National Day of Thanksgiving. So it's just a day where we say thanks to certain groups. We try to say thanks to everybody in your life, of course, if you want to, but it's just a fantastic opportunity for the community and especially churches to connect and say thanks for everything you've done this year. So we're concentrating on this year, we're concentrating on people in our community, especially our people in transport and the people in the travel industry. So you can write thank you cards to your bus drivers or your taxi drivers or people who the people who make up your room in the morning, if you're lucky enough to be someone who travels and use those hotel rooms and things like that. So we are really focusing on thanking our neighbours and people who are working in the travel and transport industries, like your bus drivers and your flight attendants and things like that. So we're asking people to visit the website, which is thanksgiving.org.au. It's coming up on the Saturday the 31st of May. It's been going about nine years, got a lot of momentum behind it, and it's just our way of sort of spreading the love in the community by saying thanks for being in our community.
There's something really positive as a benefit, though. As you say thanks, somehow it just turns around and serves it right back up at you, doesn't it?
Oh, I really believe in that. I really believe in energy output, energy coming back. And I really believe that, you know, if you invest in people with a kind heart and enthusiasm, it definitely comes back to you, and you don't have to wait for it. It usually comes back to you to surprise you, which I really love too. If people visit the website thanksgiving.org.au, you'll have plenty of examples of how people have given thanks in the years gone past, how people are going to give thanks this Saturday, and how people in those communities of the transport and travel and our neighbours, how they can be honoured by you on the National Day of Thanksgiving. There's plenty of ideas there at thanksgiving.org.au.
Duncan Armstrong, it's been fun catching up. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Wayne.